It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 26th day of January 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And as chance would have it, this is indeed, on this 26th day of January 2021, the first installment, if you will, of Naked Radio in 2021. I know, hard to believe. But it's a lovely 75 degrees here in the Horn Studios, and we've had sunny skies, kind of blustery and windy with some high puffy clouds blowing by. But this morning I had to go out and head down to the settlements for provisions, and when I walked out the door at 10 o'clock this morning, I had my hoodie on, and the hoodie was way too much. And it's a dark navy blue, and so I had my back to the sun, and I just stood still for a minute. And I felt the sun warming me rather intensely through the fabric of my hoodie. And I realized, hey, this could be great. We could have Robin's birthday week Naked Radio. And so here we are. Yes, Naked Radio, the earliest I think we've ever done it, the 26th day of January, 2021. There's no video. You'll have to use your own imagination. The horror. Things look a little different now. Oh, well, but, you know, what? Sauce for something about geese and gooses and ganders and whatnot. Right, yeah. So, anyway, welcome to the first Titanic Tuesday of the Biden era here in the socialist workers' paradise of the Biden administration. I say that with my tongue planted firmly in my cheek. Yeah, hi, I'm Robin. And, of course, you'll recall that we spend Titanic Tuesday, if not celebrating, then at least taking note of some Titanic aspects, Titanic instances of what passes for intellect on the right-wing maggot Republican side of the aisle. And today is no different in that regard. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so consequently, thanks go out to our 26th day of the month subscribers, and it's a fairly brief list. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs, and thank you very much to Ellen, as I mentioned last night. Thank you, Ellen, for jumping in and helping out. Ralphs is the only subscriber on the 26th day of the month. I'm sure Ralphs would love to have some company as far as subscribers go. But what that means is we have a ways to go fundraising wise. We can finish the week, the whole week and the whole month, by raising $730. And if we do that today, then tomorrow is fundraising free, Thursday is fundraising free, and Friday is fundraising free. Well, we got $730 to go. And let's see. Let me check a couple of emails before we get started. By the way, if you'd like to enhance your listening experience, your horn listening experience, then by Jove, please feel free to run by headon.live. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and lo and behold, you will be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Sparky usually takes Wednesdays off, but I'm not sure. Maybe he had a doctor appointment to run to or something. But nonetheless, you will be in capable hands with Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy. There's a lot of fun that happens in there. So just to get things going here, a couple of things. One, a note from Kyle in Kentucky Stan. I know we've talked about it a lot on this program, but I feel like a lot of people aren't connecting the dots, re the insurrection. It was planned by Trump's loyalists in order to stop the proceedings long enough for some of the contested states to get back into legislative session and give Trump the electoral votes needed to win. That's why the Pentagon wouldn't let the National Guard come into D.C. Donnie almost pulled this off. I don't think most people realize how close they got. I know we're into the Biden administration, but we should be running with our hair on fire over this. We came within a few days of losing our way of governance, such as it is, forever. Yeah, and I'll add something to that. There should be hard, harsh, and brutal punishment for everyone, and I do mean everyone, involved with this, up to and including capital punishment. Because treason is punishable by capital punishment. So there's that, and I think Kyle is in fact correct. And then this. Trump-tanic Tuesdays continue. Robin! Well, I wanted to think when this asshole left office that we'd be done with him, but obviously I'm wrong, because just by the sheer fact that I predict not one of the Senate Republicans will vote to convict Trump is a sure sign that Republicans are deathly afraid of the maggots and Donald Trump. And, well, even Jeffrey is a bit subdued.
Yes, the plague will always be with us, and so will the COVID, too. The real plague is Donald Trump. Yesterday, we were speaking of mobsters, and even if the state of New York comes through with the conviction of Trump, his sons and Ivanka, the Trump crime family, may be capable of performing their evil criminal. Yes, the Trump crime family may be able to run their criminal enterprise and perform all of their other, wait for it, may be able to perform all their criminal machinations from a state prison in New York. Machinations, well, that's just magnificent, Jeffrey. Now, there was some question about the whereabouts of Barron Trump. Jeffrey would like to tell the story. Yes, Barron read the writing on the great Trump Walla Dalla, donned a red hat, became the Red Baron, and headed for the border. His mother said, "Little Baron should have no trouble clearing that wall, considering only 47 miles of the 453-mile, $15 billion Walla project have been completed to go. Go, my little Baron, go." Well done, Jeffrey. Well done. Actually, well not done, and never will be, and okay, that's one. Okay, Robin, if you want me to stop using the B word, then please don't refer to Barron as Boron, because he's only a kid, and I do not think he has committed any crimes yet. That's not the same thing. That's not the same thing at all. Boron is an element on the periodic table of elements. I do believe it's a heavy metal. And if anybody out there would have a right to be a metal kid, it's the child, it's Melanoma's son. Remember, that's how Nitwit Nero refers to her. And then, of course, you know, there's the fact that there's nothing misogynistic in using that term. Just, yeah. On this day back in 1907, Congress passed the Tillman Act, which prohibited corporations from making direct campaign contributions to federal election candidates. But, well, that's been completely circumvented by Buckley, Bilotti, and Citizens United. So tell us, what would it take for the return of the Tillman? Because we really need to get money out of politics. Jeffrey, somewhat sullenly. Joey was very upset last night when Mitch McConman conceded defeat, but was McLaughing his ass off because he has two or three so-called Democratic senators in his McCaucus maintaining the filibuster. With this in mind, Robin, please tell us what we can accomplish, if anything, in the Senate with this Senate scenario. Thank you, Jeffrey, for discussing Mitch McCracker. Well, we can get absolutely as much done as we could have done the day before. In other words, whatever you can do by 51 to 50, we can do. Anything that requires a 60 vote threshold, nah, we probably can't do, because, as you know, Nitwit Nero may be gone, but not gone enough. So, you know, that. Yesterday, Joey says, I was not very moved by the departure of the deportment, Ohio's Republican senator, because now we'll have the likes of Jane, you ignorant slug, Timken, or the cowardly coach, Jim Shorts Jordan, as the next senator. By the way, Robin, in one of Joey's journals last week, I mentioned the most obvious person in contention for that Senate seat on the Democratic side is Tim Ryan. Unfortunately, I do not hold out much hope for that seat because of the nearly 1 million minorities who've been kicked off the voting rolls in Ohio over the past 10 years, not to mention the lack of participation in off-season elections. There's just too much voter suppression in Ohio, Stan. Oh, and Jeffrey's back with some law. Now, I see the Law and Order rube publicans don't want to do justice for Donald Trump, Derelict Evans, and Rick Saccone, all of whom are political figures that were involved with the insurrection at the Capitol building on the 6th. In fact, Saccone, this 62-year-old asshole who ran against Connor Lamb for a House seat in 17, said, "We are storming the Capitol. Our vanguard has broken through the barricades. We will save this nation. Are you with me?" Since then, Saccone had to resign from his college teaching position and may be facing federal charges. And Jeffrey finishes, "Well, Robin, just because justice does not work for West Virginia," Jeffrey referring to Jim, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, "that does not mean that justice cannot work for the rest of the country." This has been Joey's Journal for one of the many in the continuing sagas of Trump-tanic Tuesdays for the 26th day of January 2021, with Giraffery finishing off the last line of the Pledge of Allegiance, and with justice for all. And so, that having been said, there is, by God, a $25 Big Jim Justice Challenge. Great Big Jim Justice Challenge. Thank you, Jeffrey and Giraffery. And courtesy of Rico in DeBerg, where it's cold and gray and Rico can't wait until spring. Well, we got a little taste of it here today, and we get one of those every year. Just late January, early February, it'll warm up for one day. My God, the birds were chirping. The birds were chirping out in the yard, and they sounded so nice. And I just warned them. I said, "Listen, this is not going to last. This is fall spring. It's just a nice day. Don't get too excited." They're like, "Spoil sport." But, so Rico says, "Hey, I want to do a challenge in honor of the 50-50 Senate and Moscow Mitch caving to Schumer. So far, so good. I'll put up $50 and I'll put another $50 if the challenge is met. And thank you for opening up about your hardships and your journey in becoming who you are. As a gay man, there are many parallels between your and my experience. Much respect, Robin, and love you much." Thank you. Thank you, Rico, and love you too so very much. Well, there will probably be more openings up as things progress along. I had another little milestone today. I had my first electrolysis sessions. We make beard go bye-bye. And, you know, I'd been warned of, "Oh, it hurts so bad. It hurts, it hurts, it hurts." And I was like, "Wait, this is what all the fuss was about?" So I looked at her and I said, "What do we got it on?" She said, 3.5. I said, "Crank that thing up to 5. Does it go to 11? This one goes to 11. No, we stayed at 5, but I was really thrilled with how well I handled it. It was exciting, and it's great. And so, you know, one down, 210 to go, or something like that. Jesus God, what did I sign up for? Fuck! But nonetheless, it's fun. Oh, and a little program announcement. I will be a guest with Nicole Sandler this coming Friday. I presume it's for the Friday afternoon program. But, I'm going to have a video chat for Nicole's show. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. And maybe you'll want to tune in for that. And hope you enjoy if you did. So the 50-50 Senate Moscow Mitch caving to Schumer challenge is on the table, as is the great big old Jim Justice challenge. That means $75, and if those are met, that's 150, plus another 50 goes in after that, that's 200, and that would get us down to $530 to go in terms of finishing both my natal month, the week itself, and go boldly into February. More on Monday will be the first day of February, so there's that. All right. Couple of things. I mean, it's been a day, a day of many more ends. Oh, it so has. And, you know, more ends are often known to pop up during, more ends are also known to pop up during Titanic Tuesday programs because of just simple carryover and the sort of, relationship between the two days. Yeah. Oh, and something else to announce. I mentioned the other day that, or I mentioned yesterday that my birthday coffee maker arrived from Chris in Germany. And this thing's a wonder. I think if I push the button right, it'll maybe project a hologram of Joe Biden down onto the floor. And I can say, "Help us, Joe. You're our only hope." I know I'm getting the whole Star Wars thing messed up, but it's fantastic. And so I'm having my first cup of decaf out of it, even as we speak. And damn if it isn't nice. It is so very nice. So thank you, Chris. And yes, the coffee pods finally, they were supposed to be here Saturday. Amazon finally got them here today, so I'm not going to look Amazon in the teeth or anything like that. No. Oh, hell no. Dave in the blind. Oh, hell no, Robin. Naked Radio in January. Lady, you're crazy. We know you, and yes, you're crazy, but Naked Radio in January, there's just not something right about this. There should be an ad hoc fact-finding group formed here in the Horn community. You don't want to find those facts, Dave. You so don't want to, but oh, well. I mean, here it is. I mean, at least I didn't play the alley cat. No, I didn't do that. But yeah, it's just too nice not to have Naked Radio by a long shot. So but anyway, hopefully we will we'll jump on these two challenges, the 50-50 Senate Schumer capitulation challenge and the Big Jim Justice challenge, and well. Help pay the very last of January's bills and maybe be to the good in that regard. It would be wonderful if we could do that. True enough, Lee in New York points out morons. I doubt morons are capable of reading calendars. Happy Titanic Tuesday. Well, I can. I mean, so, yeah, in the chat room, Stockton Larry saying, wouldn't that be moronic hangover? And it certainly is. You're absolutely right. Ugh. But places to start today, because it is Titanic Tuesday. And so, consequently,
that means that on any given Titanic Tuesday, there's at least a 60% possibility that one of the greatest Titanic intellects in the country, namely Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, will find its way into the program. It is for the thing on its head, on his head, not pronouns. They're only getting more confusing. So, it was earlier today. No. Yes. It was earlier today that in the Senate there was a 55-45 vote to block a maggot attempt to stymie the upcoming impeachment trial. And so five Republicans joined 50 Democrats. Yes, even Kyrsten Sinema and even Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema being Arizona's answer to Joe Manchin, only with better hair. It takes a lot to have better hair than Joe Manchin. I often think that maybe that line in Werewolves of London, Warren Zevon. I always think that maybe Warren Zevon was thinking about Joe Manchin when he wrote, "His hair was perfect." But anyway, Kyrsten Sinema decided, and Joe Manchin both announced that they, they're dear, dear friends of the filibuster, and nobody loves a racist anachronism in the United States Senate quite like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Yes, yes, absolutely. Right. So it was 55-45 on a motion brought by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. Yeah. Because he and other maggots have said that having a proceeding in the Senate that comes from the Constitution is unconstitutional because I sing a Constitution. Yeah. What makes it unconstitutional? Well, what makes it unconstitutional is apparently the fact that old Balls and Strikes John Roberts will not be presiding over the trial because these goddamn Republicans don't have enough sense to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel and are apparently utterly oblivious of all the other times that people who were not the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States have presided over impeachment proceedings in the Senate, beginning with Aaron Burr and going forward from there. These fucking idiots. I'm sorry. I'm early into the F-bombs. I apologize. It's one thing to throw the F-bombs around in a program that starts at 9 or 10 or 12 or something like that, but this early in the day, I mean, there might be children out there. Kids, don't talk like old Auntie Robin, okay? Don't do that. Just don't. But it really, when you see manifestations of stupidity like this, I mean, I understand being in opposition. I understand being part of the loyal opposition. I understand delaying and obfuscating solely for the purpose of delaying and obfuscating. But to do it by leveraging your own stupidity, that's dedication. Yes, it is. A lot of dedication. Because that they really did. With Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, leading the charge, 45 Republicans shrieked and squealed and hooted and grunted and barked and groaned and moaned and howled all about how it's unconstitutional to do something that's in the Constitution. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, told the other maggots, this proceeding, which would try a private citizen and not a president, vice president, or a civil officer, violates the Constitution that exists only in between my ears. You'll notice I didn't say in my brains. No, it's just sort of bobbing around in the thin gray settlings between Rand Paul's ears that pass for brains. Chuck Schumer described Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's ideas as a constitutional get out of jail free card that's flat out wrong. And Chuck Schumer then offered up a motion. This is the kind of chess that you see in the Senate. Schumer offered up a motion that would have just taken Rand Paul's motion out behind the barn and beaten it with an axe handle until it was an ugly mess. But no, when they voted on the motion, it was 55 to 45. And five Republicans had crossed the line. And so there will be a trial, unless somehow or another they figure out a way to... Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
Say hi.
Hi.
Hey, it's Agnes.
Hi, guys. Love you all.
And she does, you know. She so does.
Yes, I do.
Riley, I do.
Love you better than cheese.
Love you better than chicken. Yeah. Sorry. There they are. Okay, good. I was looking for my little nicotine pouches. Sorry. Yeah, not even any heat going in the studio this evening. How about that? Pretty impressive. But I'm trying to figure out, so now that he's lost his motion, does Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, does he run down to Mara Sleezo, kiss the ring, and then run back and maybe run all the way back to Washington and file some sort of writ or something with the Supreme Court of the United States to try to stop the trial? And would those six maggots on the Supreme Court be willing to actually interfere with this Senate trial? I mean, I don't know. And what Rand Paul was trying to do was to get a vote in the chamber as to whether or not the trial was even constitutional. So the wrangling begins, and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is, of course, a titanic intellect. One of those Republicans who spoke out against the genius, Wile E. Coyote, super genius, who spoke out against the genius of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, was Lisa Murkowski. And she said, my review of it has led me to conclude that it is constitutional in recognizing that impeachment is not solely about removing a president. It is also a matter of political consequence. And alongside Lisa Murkowski came Bishop Willard Romney, Ben Sasse, that new and different kind of Republican who turns out to be exactly the same old kind of Republican, and Patrick Toomey of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And, of course, what fun would this be without world-famous, noted, middle-of-the-road Republican moderate Susan Collins? Yeah. So that gives you an idea of where we're headed. That means that if you assume that those five stay there in terms of their vote on whether to convict,
then you got to go find 12 more senators. How about Rob Portman? You know, we talked about the fact that he's not coming back. He's done. He issued a petulant little declaration saying that senating was just not no fun no more. Yeah. Could he be the sixth? At some point, we'll take the list of Republican senators. My God, what would the maggots, and this is a legitimate question, what would the maggots do in Ohio-stan? Joey was talking a little bit about Ohio politics. What would the maggots in Ohio-stan do? Or rather, if Rob Portman was to vote to convict Donald Trump on a case where, figuratively speaking, he was literally witnessed by millions of people shooting someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue. And he said he could get away with it. The question is, will he? And what if Mitch McConnell? What would the maggots in Kentucky stand do? I think it's an interesting concept to ponder. Mitch McConnell wants his party back. It's hard to see how he gets his party back without trying to do something about getting shed of the aforementioned nitwit Nero. And the Reuters article that I'm relying on for all of this notes that although the Constitution calls on the Chief Justice to preside over presidential impeachment trials, that's one of those moments where I think if I was the editor, I would have said, no, use the quote, use the constitutional language, the president. A senator presides when the impeached is not the current president, a Senate source said. First elected to the chamber in 1974, Patrick Leahy, 80, is the most senior Democrat in the chamber and holds the title of Senate President pro tem. Pro tempore. For the time being. And so there for about, a span of time that I think you have to use the Large Hadron Collider or whatever to measure. Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, almost sounded like he made sense, but of course we know that he damned well didn't. Thank you. Thank you to Mike in Cascadia. $25 in no way, shape, form, or fashion to any challenge but the big Jim Justice challenge. So that's out of the way. And now we need to find $50 to go with Rico's 50-50 Senate challenge and Mitch McConnell capitulation, otherwise known as a capitulation. See, that stuffed giraffe's not the only one that can make a pun. The capitulation. Oh, I don't care if you don't like it. I'm proud of it. Yeah. So there. But we need to find $50 to go with that. So thank you. Thank you very kindly, Mike in Cascadia. Better hair than Joe Manchin. Steve in New York says, Rick Perry has much better hair. Molly Ivins used to call him Governor Goodhair or Governor Perry, who has great hair. But, well... Yes, but where is Rick Goodhair Perry and his good hair and his smart guy glasses now, huh? I mean, did he ever actually do anything as Secretary of Energy? No? So now he goes and enjoys that long walk to the mailbox every month? Is that how they get? Okay, so it's not the Alley Cat, according to Flavio. The striptease song is The Stripper, composed by David Rose, released in 1958. The Alley Cat was Frank Bjorn, 1962, and is a rather different song. I don't know why I was thinking of the Alley Cat. Maybe I'm just feeling kind of catty. Damn giraffes, wearing off, rubbing off on me. Stop that. There ain't going to be no giraffe rubbing around here. Now quit it. Right. Note from Jimmy in the Great Northwest. How many times do you have to say it's Robin's first naked radio? It is. How many times do you have to say, because it's in the Constitution to make it constitutional? Well, let's find out. One, two, three. Three. Rand Paul's neighbor for Sergeant-at-Arms of the United States Senate. I'm all for checks and balances. Let's put a check on Rand by appointing Rand Paul's neighbor as the Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms, whose sole task is to make sure that Senator Junior from the common poverty of Kentucky shuts his effin' mouth. Hear, hear, Dave and the blind in Talibandiana, which, of course, neighbors the common poor of Kentucky Stan. Yes. Yeah, right. And so, you know, I feel like we're pretty well off and running, don't you? Good news yesterday. One of the things that new Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, the first woman to occupy that position, one of the things that she's going to make a priority project of hers is getting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. And won't it be nice for the indigenous people of this country to be able to finally carry a $20 bill in their pockets? Because a lot of indigenous people in this country will not carry a $20 bill in their pockets, purses, wallets, what have you, now, and haven't ever, for as long as it's had that genocidal old racist Andrew Jackson on it. And so apparently, by appointing Janet Yellen, that's two racist presidents that Joe Biden has gotten rid of in a single week. I like it like that, right? Yeah. I mean, it's true. And so hope, and one of the things that pleased the maggots so mightily was that Nitwit Nero promised, we're not going to have any black women on our money. Yeah. He tried to keep it from happening. Because, well, remember, the maggot base is a bunch of goddamn racists. It's not like they've changed anytime soon. Presidential spokeswoman Jen Psaki said, the Treasury Department is taking steps to resume efforts to put Harriet Tubman on the face of the new $20 notes. That's a couple of infinitives too many, but to resume efforts to put. So hopefully that will happen. Maybe before the halfway point of the administration. She added, it's important that our notes, our money, reflect the history and diversity of our country, and Harriet Tubman's image gracing the new $20 note would certainly reflect that. Good. I mean, there are a lot of problems facing this country, but everything decent adds to the quantum of overall decency that this country moves toward. You might recall that Steve Mnuchin, our swamp drain in D.C. was plugged up with some Mnuchin, but it's gone now. Steve Mnuchin had said a couple of years back that, well, the new $20 bill, well, that's not going to happen until 2028 because of security issues around counterfeiting, because the $20 bill is so popular for counterfeiting. And well, you know how it is with those people. I mean, if you put one of them on the $20 bill, it might be counterfeit the minute it rolls off the federal press. Stupid fucking racists. Jesus, I hate them. But now we're going to get close. It would be nice, really. Could we see the first Tubman before 2022, maybe, please? Or maybe it has to be after 22 because we have to worry about the optics. We have to worry about what the maggots will think and how many hissies will be had on how many right-wing radio programs, how many fainting fits. Yeah, right. Oh, I know. I get the sense just the subject line just says, what? With an exclamation point. I know. Matt in San Francisco, I think, is reaching for the smelling salts. Women on the money? What's next? Women in the workforce? Women in leadership? Women wearing pants? I'm clutching my pearls. Yes, Matt, yes. Clutch your pearls. If I had any, I'd clutch yours extra lot good, because I don't got none yet. Don't got no good grammar, neither. I can't wait to say this is Steve in New York. Do you have a 10 and 2 fives for a Tubman? Well, what was it that Barack Obama said he was going to spend his retirement doing? I'm just going to go out and collect some of those cool Tubmans. Maybe he should get the first Tubman. Maybe his presidential pension should be paid in Tubmans for the month that the first Tubman rolls off the presses. I'd be in favor of that. Race to the bottom, says Megan. Did anyone tell the GOP that a contest to be the biggest, dumbest motherfucker in the Senate wasn't really one worth having? Because even if you win, you're still a dumb motherfucker. Oh, y'all are a little spicy today. That's fine by me. But I shared what Megan said there because, well, it is Titanic Tuesday, and I guess there's a dumb motherfucker element to Titanic Tuesday. And so welcome to the program, Representative David Clark, a Repiglick, and from Georgia. Yes. He's a member of the Georgia House of Representatives, David Clark is. And he showed up on the floor of the Georgia House of Representatives. I wish I was kidding. Without a mask. And when he refused to take a COVID-19 test, well, it was necessary to call a Georgia state trooper to actually physically remove him from the House floor after he was asked to leave and in a most ungentlemanly fashion refused to go. Yes, because the Georgia House of Representatives has a rule right now that says members have to be tested twice a week for COVID-19. And Representative Clark, David Clark, had not had his test for over 3 weeks. The Republican Speaker of the House, a maggot named David Ralston, said, "We have a member of this body who has deliberately failed at all to be tested as we begin session, clearly in violation of our testing policy, jeopardizing the health of other members of this chamber." Look, again, take the little victories where they come. This is a Republican who's acknowledging that COVID-19 is a problem. Granted, he's a year late to the party, but that's okay. Because he got to the party, not the Republican Party. You get the idea. And so, this did not sit at all well with Representative David Clark, who gave an interview to one Greg Bluestein, who is the political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And asking Representative Clark about being booted out of the Georgia House. Well, David Clark, he may sue. But the Speaker is becoming a dictator. Where does it stop? The government can't do this. They can tell me next year I can't wear American flag socks because they make people feel uncomfortable. It's ridiculous. They don't have any protocol to do this. I'm going to show back up tomorrow and try to get in. I'm going to show up every day and work for my constituents. No, you stupid little fuck. You're not working for your constituents as long as you're flouting the rules of the House and can't get into the body to even so much as cast a vote. God damn, they're stupid.
Yeah. No, I was thinking about that. No, he does not spell. No, Ralphs, he does not spell his name the same as David Clarkey of former sheriff of Milwaukee. No, he's just a Clark, as in Griswold, only without half the personality. Well, they can't do this. It's ridiculous. American flag socks, really? Because it makes somebody who's made uncomfortable by American flag socks? I mean, okay, maybe the American Legion is made uncomfortable by the American flag socks because American flag socks are in direct contravention of the rules for respecting the flag as promulgated by the American Legion. But, you know, apart from that, and somehow or another, I don't think David Clark's Republican American flag socks could possibly cause a breakout of, I mean, maybe they could cause a breakout of say athlete's foot in the Republican controlled Georgia House, but that would take some pretty intimate contact. And I'm guessing if David Clark took his American flag socks off and went running around rubbing all his fellow members of the Georgia House on the face with his stinking Republican athlete's foot socks, they might have to call that state trooper again. Republicans. Maggots. What are you going to do? So hopefully he will, in fact, show up again tomorrow and get his ass hauled out again tomorrow, or maybe between now and tomorrow he'll come down with the Rona and won't be able to show up, because that begs the question. That's what he's saying. I want to be infected and be able to walk into this chamber and spread my disease. I want to hold them in my armchair, let them feel my disease. Sorry, Beatles reference, couldn't help it. But when one of these idiots refuses to get tested, they're saying, you know, I just really don't care if I infect you all. Fuck all y'all. And that's kind of, you know, it's just, you know, it's who they are. They're plague rats. I don't think there's a whole lot to be said about it. But since I mentioned him a little bit earlier, how about checking in on Titanic Tuesday with Jim Schwartz Jordan, possibly within a couple of years to be the junior senator from the state of Ohio, Stan? And you're right. I'm surprised I didn't think of Tim Ryan, Joey, but I guess he could be the Democratic nominee, but I don't know. Would you really want to give up his House seat in exchange? There's just not much of a Democratic bench in Ohio, is there? No. Well, Jim Schwartz Jordan's all mad at Dr. Fauci because Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and some other people have been talking about what a lousy job the maggots did in their deliberate mishandling of the pandemic. And there's a new thing out there, and I'm waiting to hear from Paul from Parts Unknown on this because he's about the most expert person we have. He is the most expert person we have on the topic. I'm trying to get my head around this idea of double masking now, because Dr. Fauci and others are talking about with the advent of the highly contagious strain of the virus that we might want to go to two masks, like a disposable mask underneath and that's what I'm saying. I don't understand. It's going to take a little help here. Is it a disposable mask under like a KN95 or an N95, or is it a disposable mask over the KN95? A little clarity would help. High clarity. But none of that really matters to Jim Schwartz Jordan, who somehow looked the other way at the rape of young men
and is looking the other way at a pandemic, too. Apparently ignoring dangerous things, bad dangerous things, is par for the course for Jim Shorts Jordan. Yeah, he tweeted today. First it was don't wear a mask. Then it was wear a mask. Now wear two masks. What's next? Shopping in plastic bubbles? You goofy fucker. Believe you me, and I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in this. And I'm not talking about just wear. I'm saying it would be nice to have one. I don't know if some enterprising practitioner of engineering and design is out there doing this, but we really do, and they don't have to be latex because a lot of people have allergies. But a full body condom seems a pretty good idea about now. I mean, okay, maybe, not full footed. Maybe it could be like, you know, cropped at the ankle. That way you can get your American flag socks on over them. But just, you know, you leave and just tear it off and done. I don't mean in public or anything. What's next? Shopping in plastic bubbles? Oh, bub. And so he was immediately savaged by the interweb tubes. One individual noting, please be less stupid. He never said not to wear a mask. He said where mask wearing isn't feasible to practice social distancing. The virus is mutated and adapted this year. Fauci's trying to help you. I don't know why, but he's a really good person. Again, be less stupid. What makes that art is the he's trying to help you. I don't know why, but he's a really good person. Yeah, because I think there's a whole lot of America that wouldn't really care if Jim Shorts Jordan, Matt Gaetz, those types were dipped by the heel in a vat of COVID. Yeah, I know. But, you know, Jim Shorts Jordan is going to say Jim Shorts Jordan things because Jim Shorts Jordan is a fucking idiot. Old Jim Shorts, Steve in New York, says, clearly what's next is shark with frickin' laser beams on their heads. Sure. What's next? Sharks with frickin' laser beams? Yeah, why not? And in answer to a question, and a photo include, is U.S. money still printed on paper? Robert asks. I've pretty much gone cashless in the last 12 months. Many Australians have. It's tap and go everywhere. On the subject of USA money, are the bills still printed on paper? Well, yes. Yeah, it's paper. It's got a lot of highfalutin whatnot in it to make it less counterfeitable and different colorations, and they're not the traditional greenbacks. There's some yellows and what appear to be oranges and maybe ochres and perhaps the jacinth. But no, we still have paper money. All our bills in Australia are different colors and transparent in places. Well, that's just like having a wallet full of rainbow. Oh, now I understand. Rainbows. Yeah, you get the fundies upset. Braille markings were introduced a while back on Australian money. The polymer notes are as close to impossible to counterfeit as you can get. Like many, I was annoyed when they changed the design, removing Caroline Chisholm and replacing her with Liz the Second, like Liz wasn't already on all the coins. Oh, God save the coin. Right. But that's some, the photo I'm looking at, that's some pretty looking money. And it does, it looks kind of rainbowy. Yeah. Almost feels like an idea, doesn't it? And there, Randy Radar pointing out, become Visa or MasterCard and rake in 2% of the overall economy. That sounds nice. Ha, 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 ha. Paying orange asshole in Tubman's would be the only way to make him not actually want to make money. I'd love to hear his reaction to a black woman's face on bills, knowing it's President Obama's VP who made the bills going into circulation a reality. So much for him not being the real president, huh? Huh, Donnie, huh? Yeah, huh? Yeah, huh? Albert in Rhode Island, the American bill most likely counterfeited today is probably the $100 bill. Well, that wasn't what Mnuchin says, but I wouldn't argue. What does it say, asks Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx. What does it say when Stormy Daniels, a porn star, gets tested more often than a member of the Georgia state legislature? She has to get tested for STIs and COVID before she works and still insists that her co-stars wear adequate protection. It's the that makes it art. But the guy in Georgia has to be escorted out the door by a state trooper because he won't? What kind of fresh hell is this? Oh, there's nothing fresh about it, Angelo. It's the same old hell. It's the maggot hell. And follow up with from Kyle. Rhetorical question. Why is it that the people who know the least about the American flag and the Constitution claim that they love the flag and the Constitution more than anyone? And I know. Paper currency, Lee in New York says it's actually more cloth. That's why it doesn't fall apart when washed anymore. Yeah, but it still tears. As to masks, Megan says, hell, I've repurposed old bras for face masks. The cup fits over my face nicely, and it has the added bonus of the extra lining to protect you. I'd be perfectly happy to sew a few old bras for Jim Shorts Jordans. You wear one over his face, and if it got him to shut the fuck up, might even make him look less stupid, too. You know, that's so funny, Megan. I was walking through the store the other day, and I saw this sort of spangly, sequiny, because there's some seriously blingy masks out there now. I just kind of glanced at it, and it was pretty, and it was pink, and it had lace on it and sequins, and I'm like, that's not a mask. That's a half a bra. Please. Thought about it for a minute. Never mind. Take it where we can get it, Steve in New York says, in these very dismal times when there's a little positive COVID-related news, I feel it incumbent upon me to share. We've been under 200,000 cases per day since January 16th, going from 201,000 on January 16th to 151,000 on January 25th. The seven-day running daily average is down from nearly 223,000 on January 16th to 171,000. Daily deaths went from 3,352 on January 16th to 1,915 on January 25th. The seven-day running average on January 16th was 3,334. On January 25th, it is 3,161. These numbers are, of course, dreadfully high. However, at least over the last 10 days or so, we are starting to head in the right direction. Here, here. And, of course, this will cause a massive paroxysm of white-wing paranoia and Q-tip Q-niptions. Man, Jeffrey had a terrible impact on me today. Q-tip Q-niptions screaming, see, they're doctoring up the numbers. They're fudging them. No, no, maggot. We are doctoring the numbers. That means that more people are paying attention to the doctors. See? Oh! I had no idea. Randy Radar points out, supposedly North Korea makes most of their money counterfeiting U.S. $100 bills. That's why I don't carry hundreds in my wallet. Well, I don't either. But, every time I pay with even a 20 at the grocery store, they got that little marker and they swipe over it to make sure that it's legit. I always try to dry my 20s extra, a second cycle through just so they won't run when they get hit with the marker. That's a joke, Agent Fred. I don't print money. I'm not the United States government. Yeah, you know, at this point in time, I would settle Robert in Australia for a 1960s Star Trek spacesuit. Just look it up. It's not quite the... It doesn't quite have the disposability that I was looking for in a full-body condom, but, you know. Yeah. So, wow, where'd the first hour of the program go? They fly by when we're busy like this. And, you know, look, we've touched tangentially, but it's kind of it's proven to be significantly less maggoty than what we're used to. And, well, maybe it's just the naked radio, but I feel so much better about it all. I I had no idea. A little trivia point. Black person on the money, due to a bad design, the back of the $2 bill, the one with Jefferson on it, looks like one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence was black. Maybe they were, and just nobody told us, or it's been suppressed. Did I say two? I didn't mean to say two. Okay, supposedly North Korea makes most of their money counterfeiting U.S. Okay. I didn't know I said two main income sources. One was counterfeiting U.S. $100 bills. What was the other? Kidnapping people from abroad and holding them for ransom. Oh, busy, busy, busy day. And that's cool. And by the way, this is, of course, conversation radio. I'm less confused now. Randy Radar said, sorry, misdirected email. I didn't say, somebody check the tape real quick. Did I say two? And this from Arnold in PA.
I just want you all to know I did not take any advanced history classes and I have not studied anything about our parliamentary history. Thank you.
Arnold signs that, not me, Rand Paul. That sounds just about right. Oh, and our pal Reverbo said earlier, the announcer on my local classical station, in referencing Trump, just mispronounced predecessor. Instead, it sounded like putecessor. And I loved it. As will you. Putecessor? P-U-T-I-C-E-S-S-O-R? Oh, I do love it. I love it so much. That's, well, hell yeah. No, really, no, please, no. This just popped in via Darlene with the simple subject line. Ah, jeez. And you'll understand why she said that in just a minute. The headline reads, Senator Patrick Leahy taken to the hospital after presiding over Trump impeachment. He fell ill today. So we heard him there when they received when the Senate received the bill of impeachment. Senator Leahy's spokesperson said this evening, Senator Leahy was in his Capitol office and was not feeling well. He didn't sound good last night. He was examined in the Capitol by the attending physician. Out of an abundance of caution, the attending physician recommended that he be taken to a local hospital. And he's under evaluation. The story is still fluid. Nobody knows if he was tested for COVID or if it was something else. He was vaccinated, Senator Leahy was, on the 19th day of December. And 3 to 4 weeks later, he would have gotten the second dose, I presume. He did. Let's look at the calendar here. That was December the which? 19th. Okay. So back up to 1, 2, 3. 4 weeks was a week and a half ago. So you would assume that he's had the second dose. And that's really all we have, but we don't have senators to give. And I don't, well, and that's just premature anyway, so don't even say that, Robin, okay? But you cringe with just about everything, because everything is so damned precarious, I suppose. And I realize, let's be clear about this. I understand that Joe Biden is far and away nowhere near being ideologically pure enough to satisfy us. Because over here on our side, we insist, by God, we insist on ideological purity. If we have nothing else, and we don't really, we have our diehard devotion to ideological purity. And if you can't have ideological purity, what's the use in having political power? Oh, wait, let's leave that alone for a minute. But the bottom line is, the Biden administration is hitting the ground running. And today he signed a brace of executive orders on housing and did something else that the ideological purity folks have wanted to see. Namely, he has, through an executive order, put an end to the Justice Department using private prisons. Now, this does not apply to the private immigration concentration camps. That's a little bit heavier lift. But the Justice Department cannot use private prisons anymore, according to this executive order and whenever it is that it goes into effect. And that is strictly within his purview. Once again, executive orders are how the chief executive administers his oath to faithfully execute the laws. He tells the executive departments how to do it through executive orders. I know I'm kind of going slow on this, but you'd be surprised the number of people who don't get this and are willing to parrot right-wing talking points. Of course, like I said, I'm so old, I remember when they were just teabaggers back then, but they were hollering that the Kenyan Muslim, you slurpers, you slurping and being a tyrant by using the executive orders that only white presidents are supposed to get to use. Right. But in addition to that, and that was a big deal, but overall it's part of the racial equity agenda that the White House is now trying to put in place. So in addition to not renewing contracts with private for-profit prisons, well, they're also reestablishing federal respect for tribal sovereignty. Because, of course, that was another thing that needed to be fixed, because Nitwit Nero hates him some Indians. You know, indigenous Americans. But now the federal government is going to hopefully do a little bit better job listening to the concerns of tribal people. Maybe the federal government could step in on the executive branch, could step in on the side of people like the Sioux Nations, who told Kristi Noem that they didn't want any of her disease-bearing maggot white folks on their tribal lands. And she threatened to, you know, I'll sue. She's still with us. And there's also an order out there now that the Department of Health and Human Services actually investigate to find out what impact Nitwit Nero's racism and his constant barking and braying and grunting and hooting about the China virus. Try to find out how much harm that did to people of Asian and Pacific Island descent. And those are the things you do when you actually care about all Americans and not just the really pale ones. And among other things, also included in all of this, he signed executive orders designed to combat racism in housing as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about Reverbo. Reverbo noting, recall that CIA Director William Casey also took ill at a very inopportune time once upon a time in the dim and distant past. Yeah, I always think of William Casey. It got sick right when it was time for him to tell the world exactly what Ronald Reagan had done in terms of what Ronnie knew about Iran-Contra and arms for hostages and all of that shitty, treasonous rat fuckery. And then Bill Casey just had a forgetting fit in the form of a very inopportune, or opportune if you're Ronald Reagan, stroke. Right. So, like I said, that's we've just scratched the surface. And this is Conversation Radio, and if you'd like to participate, well, you are more than welcome so to do. And how do you reach the program? Well, there's the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then there's Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, and on the same line that Skype comes into, it's a Skype phone number, 304-574-8178. That's a West Virginia number. The 304 is the dead giveaway. So maybe give it a try if you feel so inclined. And in the meantime, well, it being a Tuesday and everything, and the final Tuesday of January 2021, as I count down the final days of being a 57-year-old, and Robin approaches her first birthday, third person always makes me a little creepy, but it's kind of what it is. Anyway, jump in if you've got something you'd like to get said. And new callers are always welcome. Always, always. Because that enhances and advances the conversation. So, Brad and Desi, yeah, what do you got for us?
It's Tuesday, January 19, 2021.
Imagine confronting the climate crisis with American jobs and ingenuity leading the world.
Joe Biden unveils economic recovery plan with focus on climate. Also plans blitz of action to undo Trump's environmental rollbacks. Trump unleashes his last-minute spree of rollbacks and polluter giveaways, plus...
In a blow to Canada's oil industry, sources tell CBC News Biden is also planning to cancel the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline.
It may finally be the end of the line for the controversial zombie Keystone XL pipeline.
I've heard that before. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The consensus among leading economists is we simply cannot afford not to do what I'm proposing.
Did he say we can't not afford to not do what he's proposing?
I think he did.
This is going to be a long 4 years. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we should mark the moment that this is our final Green News Report when Donald Trump is still the president.
Yep, as we go to air, it is the eve of Joe Biden's inauguration as the next president of the United States.
No, it isn't. Hold on. What the hell's going on here? All right, damn it, I hate it when this happens. Hold on. I mean, I know I downloaded it right. Duh. There's that. And there's that. And there's that. And yes. And we are all... Yes, we're happily downloaded. Now let's see. Because that didn't sound right, did it? No. It's not the eve of. It's not the last of. No. And so let's try this again. I don't think I played that one last time through, but nonetheless, it's a matter of principle. One more time.
It's Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Okay.
He has 17 executive orders, really wiping away much of what President Trump did.
President Biden moves to undo even more of Trump's attacks on the environment.
The federal government also owns an enormous fleet of vehicles.
And will use the power of the government purse to boost electric vehicles. Plus, court strikes fatal blow to Trump's polluting power plant rule.
All of those blows, fatal and otherwise, straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This back and forth, this must be so weird for other countries. Because under Obama, America celebrated the Paris Accords. But then under Trump, it was like, F the Paris Accords! Let the planet burn! And then now under Biden, it's like, all right, guys, I'm back in the Paris Accords. Sorry, yeah, and I'm also back on my meds. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we are sorry. And back on our meds. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know how long it's going to take to undo all that Donald Trump did to the environment in the last 4 years, but we're off to a good start.
Oh, definitely. The Biden administration is moving swiftly on that monumental task of undoing the damage the Trump administration inflicted on the environment while also launching Biden's whole-of-government approach to combating man-made climate change. Here is a partial list. The Biden administration announced a temporary pause on all new oil, gas, and coal leasing for U.S. lands and waters. It does not affect existing leases, but is a first step to proposing a total ban on fossil fuel leases on the public's lands. The temporary suspension also applies to new mining approvals and land swaps, including that transfer of lands in Arizona that are held sacred by Native Americans to a mining company. That is now on hold.
Good.
Biden rescinded Trump's 2019 declaration of a national emergency at the southern border with Mexico, which halts further construction of Trump's border wall that has already damaged the fragile desert environment.
Good again.
Biden also reinstated the Obama-era federal flood standard, which mandates that the design and construction of federally funded infrastructure must account for future sea level rise, increased flood risks, and other accelerating climate impacts.
Good, good, and good.
Biden's Environmental Protection Agency has asked the Department of Justice to pause its defense of Trump-era environmental rollbacks in court. The EPA is relaunching staff trainings on environmental justice and environmental racism. On Monday, as part of his Buy America plan, Biden announced he will direct the formidable purchasing power of the federal government, about $600 billion a year in funding, to buy only American-made products and materials while investing in modernizing infrastructure and climate solutions. And that includes replacing the entire U.S. government's vehicle fleet.
The federal government also owns an enormous fleet of vehicles, which we're going to replace with clean electric vehicles made right here in America by American workers, creating millions of auto worker jobs in clean energy and vehicles that are net zero emissions. And together, this will be the largest mobilization of public investment in procurement, infrastructure, and R&D since World War II.
Wow, that's huge. That's a lot of cars if he's going to replace the entire fleet. How many are we talking about here?
We are talking about 650,000 vehicles. Biden will also close loopholes that had previously allowed car makers to claim their vehicles are American-made, even if only a few parts were made in the U.S.
So a lot of electric cars are going to be made by government fiat.
Yep. Biden is also hiring climate experts for top positions in every cabinet-level agency. He'll unveil a second round of climate-related executive orders later in the week. Meanwhile, very huge, very good news. A federal court has struck down one of Trump's most consequential climate rollbacks. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals vacated the Trump administration's replacement of President Obama's landmark Clean Power Plan, the first-ever standards to reduce carbon emissions from power plants. The Trump replacement rule was so weak that the Trump administration admitted it would actually increase pollution and could cause as many as 1,400 additional premature deaths every year.
Of course, that's why he liked it.
The court said that the Trump administration, quote, fundamentally misconceived the law. And crucially, it also reaffirmed the EPA's authority to craft climate regulations for a range of sources. The ruling gives the Biden administration a clean slate to craft new rules to control greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and meet Biden's target of 100% clean electricity by 2035. Finally, auto industry experts say electric vehicles are close to the tipping point of rapid mass adoption thanks to the plummeting cost of batteries. German carmaker Audi became the latest manufacturer to announce it is ending production of internal combustion versions of its most popular car models, including plug-in hybrids, and will focus instead on going full electric. No point planning to build a car that you aren't going to be able to sell.
I told you to get rid of those internal combustion cars long ago. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And if you want those good times, those dreams to come true, buy American. That's all you've got to do. Yes, sir.
Wow, is that Al Jolson or something? Oh, here we go. Here we are. We're moving up on the halfway point of this Titanic Tuesday program. And we've got a $50 challenge still on the table, courtesy of Rico in DeBerg. Please don't let that thing die on the table. And it would be great if we could get down to only, what would that be, 500 and, yeah, that'd get us down to $530 to go to finish fundraising for the month of January. Thank you very kindly in advance. And let's go over and check in with Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Blobbin', what's shaking, man?
Steve!
You!
Well, yeah, a little bit shaken. I mean, the sun's gone down, get a little brisk, might have to put clothes back on.
That was quite the stunt that ophthalmologist Rand Paul pulled today, wasn't it?
He had to see
the parliamentarian first.
Oh, yeah, yeah, isn't he, his nasty old racist daddy just must be so freaking proud of him.
Well, at least they're showing their cards now. And if it's any indication of how they're going to vote, we really need to maybe rethink the way how we're going to play this.
Oh, I think you're right. Perhaps. I mean, one of the things that I didn't fully flesh out there was that, you know, I read off the names of the Republicans who voted against him. Willard Romney, Lisa Murkowski, Pat Toomey, who am I? Susan Collins. Oh, and Ben Sasse. Curiously, do you notice the name that's not in there, Steve? Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. That's the obvious. It's can't see the forest through the trees. Yeah. So that's very disturbing. Which, to my point, and one of the reasons that I called is after we show the horror of what happened that day. After we call the family members that have lost their loved ones. I don't know if you've ever experienced the trauma. I'm sure you have. You used to be a lawyer, but there's a lot of horror that goes on. And I know it's not a murder trial, but you could still, I mean, we're running this thing. We could practically do whatever we want, correct? As far as calling witnesses or.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not going to be one of those no. If it had been this way last time through, they would have at least had to be confronted by the evidence. So there will be evidence here.
Since every senator there was a potential witness, put them on the stand. Ask them. Call them out. Do you think what Donald J. Trump did was treasonous? And if they say yes, say, well, why don't you think this warrants conviction? Call them out. Put them on the record.
Because it's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional.
That answer does not float. It doesn't float.
No, it doesn't. But neither.
Donald Trump was.
But remember a year ago, though, Steve, you had Republicans standing up during the Senate trial saying, Well, it seems pretty clear to me that he broke the law, but it didn't rise to the level of a impeachable offense. When that was just bullshit from the beginning, because the minute that the bill is passed in the House, it was an impeachable offense.
Absolutely.
Because he stands impeached. I mean, this is that, you know,
right.
Logic
and
stuff.
He was president at the time, so that takes that off the table.
Right.
And then the Senate is obligated to have a trial.
They are indeed obligated to have a trial unless there's some sort of a motion to dismiss. That's possible as well. But that takes place within the context of a trial. Now, I didn't get to hear the debate. Like I said, I had errands to run today. But one of the things I would have loved to have seen somebody ask Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is Rand Paul, just for the clarity of the folks back home in the common poor of Kentuckistan, are you suggesting that we should dismiss this impeachment trial so that your God Emperor can be charged with a criminal offense in the federal courts of the new 90 states? Is that what you want, Randy? And then watch him turn purple.
Right. That we are well within our means to call all these hypocritical SOBs out. Put them on record. Shame them. Do whatever it takes.
And they don't really... They don't really care, because what they're afraid of is not shame. They're afraid of bullets in guns that are wielded by maggots. I mean, I have a reason to know that there's a lot of people in the federal government who, in the wake of what happened on January the 6th, Steve, are still waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's not going to put any minds at ease or anything like that. And I'm sorry, but they're nervous. They're scared, and they feel like it is not over. And, you know, I look at shit like sending the little terrorist home to be with mommy in Pennsylvania. And now the feds are moving to limit her internet access because she's still fomenting bullshit. And that does not. And look, you know, if you're on bond, you can lose all kinds of constitutional rights as a condition of bond.
Absolutely. You don't have any.
And so
you've ever been out on and probation. So, you don't have any rights.
Yeah. And so as a consequence, I'm just kind of a hard ass about all this. If everybody who was there, charge them. Everybody who was there who was not supposed to be there, charge them. And the ones who went inside the building, if you're a federal prosecutor, you move heaven and earth to find a felony to charge them with, so you can charge them with felony murder. I'm sick of this. I'm pissed off with it, Steve. And if we wind up playing patty cakes with these little fucking domestic white terrorists, by God, it's going to be a shitty country to live in going forward.
Do you think it's fear, or do you think it's part of the stranglehold that this orange monster has on this party too?
Well, it's on the party, but that shouldn't affect the DOJ.
Right.
But I think the DOJ is covered up, and that's why I've hollered for a couple of weeks now. That's why I've hollered for a special counsel on this. And let the DOJ get back to the DOJ's business, because this is literally thousands of potential cases. And a bunch of them are probably going to have to be tried. And the stuff that the DOJ does on a day-to-day basis, I fear, is going to go begging while we chase down these domestic terrorists. It is not just part of the day-to-day work of the DOJ. This was a special day, and not in a good way.
Right.
And you might be interested to know, because, of course, there's always somebody. I'm surprised Joe Manchin isn't involved with this. But there's a report out this evening via Axios that Democratic Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, former vice presidential candidate, is working in a bipartisan fashion with Susan Collins to get a compromise through in which the Senate would censure Donald Trump. Bad Donald. Bad.
Oh, my ass.
And then, of course, Donald Trump could issue a statement from the office of the former president. Jesus, that's just pitiful. Saying, fuck your censure. Fuck your censure. And, you know, then it would all be over and we'd all feel better, I guess.
Well, on your dirty morning habit this morning, he actually is giving the Senate an ultimatum. You either vote the way I want you to vote, or I'm going to split off and create a Patriot Party.
Yes. Don't call it that. Call it what it is, Steve. Do what I want you to do, or I'm going to found the PP Party. We are going to PP all over the Republicans. There's going to be PP in Texas, PP in Georgia, PP in Kentucky, PP in Alabama. We're going to PP all over the GOPP.
Those stupid son of a bitches, doesn't that tell them that he does not give a whit about them?
No, but it does tell them that, but they can't figure out, and to be fair, Steve, and God, I love our conversations, but to be fair, when you are on the tiger's back and you've got one hand on its tail and the other on its ears and you got your knees locked around its rib cage, you're pretty much maxed out for capacity and you don't have time to think about how to appease the tiger.
Riding the bull, right?
Yeah, I mean, once in a while, maybe you just, you know, go up and hang on to both ears like the handlebars of a motorcycle for a little while, but you still got your knees locked around its rib cage and everything. And, how do we get, and that is a really terrible time to start asking the question, how do we get rid of this here tiger? Because the smart money is to get rid of the tiger before you get on the tiger. But we're talking about Republicans, so
right. We got 55. We need to flip 12 more. That's going to be a heavy lift from what I see so far, unless we shame them. Getting back to my original point. And why is Roberts punning on this?
Because he's not. He is being a...
The optics are terrible having Leahy up there presiding over this.
Well, hold on. I think if the Chief Justice was Sonia Sotomayor, I would expect her to punt on it too. Because if you're going to follow constitutional plain meaning, all right? Then, as I said the other night, we understand the United States only has one president at a time. And that's why we get all that acting president language from the 25th Amendment. You can have an acting president and the president at the same time. You cannot have two the presidents. And the constitutional language speaks to when the president is impeached, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court shall preside at the trial. Okay? The president. Well, we have a the president. His name is Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Trump is merely a president, a former president.
Good God, that's splitting hairs.
No, it's not. It's the difference between definite articles and indefinite articles. A, an, or the. And words mean things.
Yeah.
So if Roberts was to preside over the trial, it would be an acknowledgement. And this is the last fucking thing you ever want to do, Steve. If Roberts was to preside over the trial, and maybe this is why they want him there, the maggots, he would have to be there because Donald Trump is the president.
I see.
Does that make
good
sense
point
to you?
Absolutely.
You see that John Roberts is that means Joe Biden ain't the president, and that's the last goddamn thing in the world we need.
So,
you have to learn to think crazy, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. And
I know you've made lifestyle changes in the past couple of years that prevent you from adequately putting yourself in a mental space to think crazy like a maggot. You know, when you've carried all the empty bottles of bottled in bond old Panther piss out to the dumpster, it's going to be hard to think like a maggot anymore.
I understand. And what the point you just made is a very good point. And I never really thought of it from that angle. But I don't give Roberts that much credit. Does he deserve that?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
Okay.
He's
that's fair.
I go all the way back to what was it, June, July of 2012. I was standing in a hotel lobby in Florence, Alabama, watching the watching the results of the Affordable Care Act litigation come in. And I said back then, and have said ever since, that John Roberts is probably the most brilliant evil genius that the mainstream Republican Party has to offer. Because it took some real genius to figure out a way to leave the Affordable Care Act in place that at the same time that you made sure that people who desperately needed health care couldn't fucking get it, namely the Medicaid expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So he's brilliant. I mean, he is smart.
Sinister.
George W. Bush appointed him because he was smart and he wanted a Chief Justice who could run a Republican Supreme Court, or at least, you know, drive the agenda, even if he got overwhelmed at some point by so-called liberal justices. He is that smart, and frankly, I give credit where it's due. I would reach the same conclusion. The difference between A and the in this case is not some sort of metaphysical hair splitting. In the English language, we have definite articles, the, and we have indefinite articles, a or an. Same thing in French. You have le or la, the, or un or in, a. So, and the other Romance languages are largely the same. And so we have to treat them as they're, you know, as having been put there for a reason.
So optics be damned, run with it then.
Yeah, I don't know that the president pro tem is the right person to do this because there's precedent for that.
What other choice is there?
The president of the Senate. The no kidding president of the United States Senate. Yes.
Right.
And
Kamala.
Yeah. Kamala Harris should preside. I mean, because Aaron Burr presided over the Senate impeachment trial of Justice Chase of the Supreme Court in 1804 and established it.
And God, the maggots would lose their minds, man.
Yes, they would, and it would be worth the cleanup on aisle three just to hear a few heads explode.
The price of admission, absolutely.
It'd be Slim Whitman in Mars Attacks, and they'd all have their little fish bowls on their heads, and you'd.
Yeah. Why doesn't the Democratic Party get a spine and start thinking out of the box like that?
That's really not out of the box thinking. That's not out of the box thinking, Steve. That's a way to do this.
Proposed or talked about?
I can guess. I mean, I don't have any inside knowledge, but you know, it's just me and the magic eight ball with the cracked screen and everything. Answer hazy. Ask again later. The fact of the matter is, I can guess that maybe you don't want to do this because of the optics. Because you don't want it to look like a partisan affair, as if having the oldest Democrat in the Senate presiding isn't partisan as well. But Jesus Christ, why are we worrying about partisanship when we saw the partisanship so broadly on display in the last impeachment hearing?
And just rewind. I mean, all the confirmations and the way they just rammed through all these judges and Merrick Garland, you could go on and on and on. about their hypocrisy on their side. You know, yeah. It's limitless. Absolutely limitless. I want to bring up one more area of concern, and then I'm going to have to bounce to let little Cletus out. She's clawing at my leg.
Oh, hi, Cletus.
She's looking at you. Hi, Bob. Well,
Cletus is a good baby.
She is. I've got the phones on, so she can't hear you. Otherwise, she'd be going to right now. Yeah. I'd have to have, I'd already be gone.
Yeah, who's a good puppy? Jones. Yeah, I know.
But Manchin, we are going to have to treat him with kid gloves because you know him better than I do.
Yeah.
Do you put it past him to flip? To say, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party.
No. I've been all over this. There's no call for him to flip right now. There's nothing that Mitch can give him that he can't get from Schumer. You know, so I don't see that happening. But there's a front where he has to be pressured, and some of this may be theater anyway. He's got a little bit of cover because he's got a pal in Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona who has suddenly found her inner conservative. And she wants to hang on to her seat, and she thinks that the smart money is hanging on to the filibuster. But so people in Arizona and people in West Virginia have got to put pressure on Joe Manchin to say, okay, you can say you're against it, but when the vote comes to get rid of it, you vote aye. And you have to lay out a cogent argument for why.
And there's variables. Instead of just flat out getting rid of it, go old school and make them stand up there and pee their pants and read it out of the telephone book.
Yeah, I think that's another option. I think we would all love to see that.
Yep.
And it's got a kind of a romantic sort of, and not in the...
Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
Yeah, exactly. It's got a sort of a black and white sort of, you know, Jimmy Stewart with his voice failing and his hair hanging into his eyes. And Mr. President, not much left. And, you know, collapsing to the floor. And we'd love to see that. We would. I mean, I admit it. We would. But
who wouldn't?
But the fact of the matter is, It's just time for it to go, okay?
Its purpose is ugly.
Right, its purpose was brutal because it was wielded most perniciously by old white Southern senators who wanted to prevent the march forward of culture and society with civil rights, and in the last In the generation in which people like you and I and the Horn Family Community Congregation have been politically cognizant, the filibuster has been used brutally a lot more often than it was in the past, solely for the purpose of keeping a president from accomplishing his, because we haven't had a her yet, goals. And we saw it under Barack Obama, and Mitch McConnell made no bones about it. I'm going to make sure that Kenyan Muslim you slurper don't get to do no more than 3/5 of some president. So, I mean, it is a labor that's out there before us, and I'm actually drafting on something, hopefully an op-ed for the local paper.
Good.
You know, calling on Manchin to finally disavow his racist roots. Because, see, I still haven't forgiven Joe Manchin for stymieing one of Barack Obama's Department of Justice nominations because the guy had acted, when he was in private practice as a lawyer, he had written an appellate brief in support of, I think it was Mumia. And Joe Manchin said, we can't have anybody who's ever signed a brief on behalf of a Negro charged with a crime holding a seat in the Department of Justice. And it was just sickening. And it just went, and nobody noticed. I mean, I did, and a few others did, but he might as well have done that standing in front of a fucking Confederate flag for all I cared.
I mean, so if I hear you correctly, you're all for just getting rid of the filibuster.
I want it gone. Altogether. I want it gone.
Gone. Absolutely. And let me ask you this. You don't fear the whiplash effect if they ever gain power again. My gosh.
They're going to gain power again. And they
carrots
had
and sticks, huh?
They had power this last time through, and the filibuster didn't slow much down with them because every time the filibuster got in the way, Mitch McConnell got rid of another piece of it. It was Mitch McConnell who said, "No, we don't need no filibuster for no Supreme Court justices no more. Got to get rid of that there." And look where we are now. So, you know, the two bodies are supposed to operate on democratic principles. The House more or less does. The Senate does not. And I say get rid of the filibuster, understanding that it may bite me in the ass somewhere along the way.
Absolutely. That's what I'm looking at, big picture.
But if you want more democracy, not less, you have to get on board with getting rid of the filibuster, because there ain't nothing democratic about it. I mean, if we're going to continue to have the filibuster, let's just, you know, because the three-fifths rule is still in the Constitution. We never got around to excising it by amendment. We just said, well, you know, the 13th Amendment took care of that.
And let's visit this hypothetically. If the PP Party was able to split the Republican Party the way that they did the Bull Moose Party split it, and you said something last night, or it may have been a couple nights ago, you said we would get something worse. What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, if
the Republican Party go the way of the Whigs.
It's what I've taken to referring to as the Arafat rule. And that is...
How could it get worse?
Don't ask.
Yeah, you should never ask that. But I'm asking you on an intellectual level. That's not a rhetorical question.
Yeah, and just to revisit it, the Arafat rule, the Israelis hated the PLO. The Israelis hated Yasser Arafat. Oh, they hated him with the heat of a thousand suns. And they did everything in possibly that they could do to get rid of him. Oh, that Arafat's terrible. He's awful. Israel can never go forward. Blah, 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 blah. We got to be done with Arafat. They get rid of Arafat, and what do they get? Something immensely worse than the PLO. And the violence goes up, not down.
And downward spiral perpetuates.
And it's that way time after time after time throughout, you know, recorded human history. Whatever you hate most, when you get rid of it, will be replaced by something even worse, because the people who hang on and reorganize will be the most vicious, the most hateful, the most toxic, the most violent, the most homicidal that you can get. And maybe it's unfair for me to use Arafat and the PLO for that, but I don't mean it that way. The mistake was on the part of the Israelis.
And the people you're describing, they're out that. They are out there. Just ask Todd. Ask anybody that listens to Washington Journal every morning.
They're ready to march.
They're ready. They're ready to take arms. Whew. And on that happy note, I better let little Cletus out, or I may have a mess to clean up.
All right. You take care, Steve. It's a great conversation. I appreciate it. Your fellow brother in the fraternity of Steve was trying to get through, but I can't join phone calls anymore for some reason or another.
Okay, well, that's too bad. Tell Steve I said hi when you bring him on.
Well, I hope he rings back in. I gave him the stress line number too, so we got that.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Blubbin.
All right,
man.
Steve, take care.
Love you, lady. Ski. I got to get used to this, man. Cut me some slack.
I understand. I love you, sibling.
All right, love you, Miss Blubbin.
Bye now. Oh, no, but there's only one Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan. Now, Steve, in New York, if you're still listening, I'm sorry I couldn't get you through. I'm still learning. I'm still learning some of this stuff, but it turns out the audio is a little bit better when I bring it in on this particular machine. Go figure. Okay, so we got Steve, and that's cool. Hey, Steve. I understand. No worries.
Okay. I just want to be real quick.
Don't get yourself in a hurry. There's no need to hurry.
The famous lady.
You're a million miles away, Steve.
There. Better?
So much.
Okay. The thing with Leahy, first of all, you know, I hate the term optics, but I'll use it. The optics of a partisan presiding, I think, is a little bit odd. What the other thing that I wonder is, since he's a juror, how...
Yeah, that bothers me too.
How... Well, he's clearly going to have to vote guilty or not guilty. Somebody else is going to have to preside when he takes his place at his desk.
Time out. Okay, just slow down for a second, because I think you've set up a situation that isn't necessarily how it has to be. They can. I'm pretty sure that a senator can vote present. And so what I would suggest is that because, again, the Senate sort of, some of these things are hard and fast. There's the Senate manual of impeachment, and we would really want to consult that if we wanted to know the bottom line. But we'll just guess at it for now. I think he could vote present is one way out, or there could be an agreement that since he was presiding, there would be no vote. Now, the Republicans might throw a fit about that, and you're the numbers geek, not me. But if you've only got 99 votes, doesn't that mean you need one less vote to convict?
Yeah. And remember, okay, and remember what it says. The Constitution says it's of those present, two-thirds of those present.
Yes.
Let me tell you something. That might be how Mitch, that lets the Trump, the Republicans who don't want to vote for, to convict, off the hook. By them, they could say they're boycotting. I'm boycotting this because I think it's bullshit. So they just don't show up to the Senate. And then you need to, you know, suppose that's 30 of them. So then you've got 70. Two-thirds of 70 is 22 times 3, 66. 27 times 3, about 27. Yeah, you'd need 54. All of the Democrats are there. Suppose you lose Manchin, you lose Sinema, you need 6.
Yeah, but hold on. Manchin and Sinema both voted to go forward with the trial today in regard to Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's stupid motion.
Right. Okay, but I'm trying to think of worst case scenario.
Well, yeah, and here's the question that you have to ask yourself in terms of the maggots. If you're a maggot senator, do you think that gets you out of hot water by the bullshit excuse of I'm protesting? Because I think the maggots are going to read it as betrayal. They're not quite so stupid as to think, yeah, boy, I tell you what, they sure showed it. Oh, shit, he can't run for president no more. Because that's a simple majority vote.
Mm-hmm.
The punishment phase is a simple majority vote.
Right. Well, I think, and it's not because I think they have any, that Mitch has any sense of principle. I really think that I would suspect that 70 to 80% of the Republican caucus would like to convict him.
Yeah, if they felt like they could do it and not be slaughtered when they went home.
Right. Because, you know, and we talked about this earlier. This is, I mean, the maggots are that's the Frankenstein's monster. They thought they could control it. You know.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, and we're not quite to Wednesday yet, but here's another way to look at it, Steve. Who comes in for rougher treatment in the Gospels? Pontius Pilate or Judas?
True.
Judas does.
Yeah.
I mean, you can almost feel sorry for Pilate, you know, because he's going, I can see where this man has done no wrong. But Judas? No. He's the betrayer. And so, you know, hating Judas is a 2,000-year-old fetish. And so if I was a Republican senator betting my continued existence on the maggots actually believing when I said I was protesting the impeachment vote, that's a paradise that I do not want to throw. Because I don't, you know, you may think that it's got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on every die, but it's probably more like 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 2. And so it's almost, you got every chance in the world of throwing snake eyes. And then the next thing you know, they're attacking the Capitol in your maggot home state, and they're looking for you and setting up a gallows on the grounds for you. So it kind of partakes of a little bit of 11D-dimensional chess, but I think the maggot senators, you know, because again, we're talking about people who went to fucking Yale Law School, okay? Not some tawdry little state law school. Yale, Harvard. These people are not stupid. And they damn sure know how dangerous the monster that they have set loose upon the land is.
And if they didn't, January 6th confirmed it.
Right. And so, you know, it's a lot to hang your hat on. It really, really is. So, yeah, there we are. Now, I understand that you disagree with me about the John Roberts thing.
Right. Because it says the Chief Justice shall preside. It doesn't say that he can't or the Chief Justice may only preside in an impeachment of the president. It doesn't say that. It just says that if it's the president, he must preside.
Yeah.
It doesn't say if it's not the president, he can't reside or preside. I mean, it's frankly neither here nor there because he's not going to be there.
Well, I don't know that it is neither here nor there. I think the thing is still in flux as the business with Senator Leahy getting checked out in the hospital suggests.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's
putting that kind of stress on an 80-year-old ticker ain't necessarily the smartest thing in the world.
No. I don't know why Harris unless the fact that she's a former senator may be an issue, or Joe may have just said, look, you're not going anywhere near that.
So was Aaron Burr, former senator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the precedent is all there on Kamala Harris's side.
Right.
And frankly, constitutionally, I don't think really, technically speaking, administratively speaking, optically speaking, whatever other speaking we're doing, Joe Biden can give orders. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says the vice president shall be the president of the Senate as long as the president of the United States consents. That's not there.
Mm-hmm.
That is her job and not his. But even though he's an old hand in the Senate who has been in there since the, 70s, that's still a period of the United States Senate that had gone far afield from what the framers originally intended for the organizational structure or the flowchart of power to be in the Senate. Because otherwise the vice presidency was, as John Adams noted, just a miserable, damn meaningless job. and other vice presidents have gone on to express similar. But that business, you know, I don't know. I think if I was the vice president of the United States, I would spend every day of my life being president of the Senate. You know, it's the old, you had one job.
Right.
And that's the, there's nothing in the Constitution about going to funerals in the president's place.
Right.
There's nothing, there's nothing in the Constitution about cutting ribbons at shopping center openings. Mm-hmm. What is in there is that the vice president shall be the president of the Senate. And there we are back at those shalls again.
Right. The other thing, too, is the as I think about it, the vice president does not serve at the pleasure of the president.
Absolutely not.
So she could basically say, sorry, Joe, I'm doing this. You might not like it.
But it's my job.
It's my job. Yeah. I think she's the – I think that's – I was surprised when they chose Leahy because I thought Kamala was the that seemed the obvious choice. It was the obvious choice. It was also
the uncontestable choice.
Right.
But you know, I guess by virtue of some level of agreement between Schumer and McConnell, they agreed it would be Patrick Leahy. Now, I wonder if they went to Patrick Leahy and said, hey, would you mind?
Right.
Because, you know, Leahy, among other things, like Kamala Harris, is an old prosecutor, only a lot older. And he's a good legal mind. So it wouldn't be like having Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, up there. I mean, it's not a crazy idea. But it does not make sense when the Constitution gives you a plain, simple answer to the whole damn thing. And it's not even question. It's not even subject to question. The vice president shall.
Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine. I have a hard time thinking that in the GOP caucus that a lot of people didn't raise the issue you and I raised was, wait a minute, how can a juror preside over the trial?
And see, this is where it gets so woolly, and by woolly, I mean, you know, you've got so many strands that are interconnected, you could never ever get it untangled. But if you're a maggot senator, you're not going to, well, you might, and this is, you know, briar patch stuff, you might holler, by God, we want Kamala Harris to do it, so that you can run against Kamala Harris and, by extension, run against Joe Biden. So, you know, that's, you know, again, back to the 11D-dimensional chess.
Right. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is, look, Mitch, again, for whatever you think of him, that guy plays politics as well as anybody I've ever seen. you know, I don't think he's, you know, I don't just think he's around the corner. He's around two corners. Looking around two corners. So I have to think that he's
oh, well, we're going to do this evening. You there, Steve? Hopefully Steve will be back in a minute. Let me see here. Working. let's try this again. Maybe we'll connect this time. I don't know if it was Steve's connectivity or mine. Well, it's just ringing and ringing and ringing, and it doesn't appear to be connecting, so that may, for once, not be me, and not that it's any, not that there's any joy to it, but I'd like for it to not be me. Let's see here. Thank you very kindly to Jude and Women Standing. Thank you very kindly indeed. That means we've got $30 to go on the Senate 50-50 capitulation challenge, courtesy of Rico and DeBerg. So $30 and that challenge gets met. That would be wonderful if we could do. And God, if we could take it down to where we've only got to do $300 tomorrow. Yeah, but that's a heavy lift. That's another $230 beyond meeting the challenges. So we will sweat the, I guess we'll sweat the end of January, but thank you. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so very much. And an interesting and damned well accurate statement here, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, insurrection. An insurrection without consequences is called a rehearsal. If these Republicans can't do what's right, and we know they won't, I hope the general public can for once see them for who they are. I agree, and the problem here is I don't think we have any problem seeing them for who they are on our side, Matt. And frankly, I don't think the maggots have any problem seeing them for who they are either. It's just that we disapprove of who they are. We disapprove of insurrection. We disapprove of violent revolution, but the maggots don't. They think it's cool. They think it's awesome. They'd like to have more of it, and they're not done. And while my conversation with Steve got cut short, I go back to what I said talking with pre-Steve, Brother Bishop Steve, and that is the language about the president. Y'all, these people, these maggots, will hang on to shit that is not even real, okay? There are millions, tens of millions of Americans, perhaps, who actively and without any critical the reasoning skills whatsoever believe, most dangerous word in the English language, that Joe Biden is part of a criminal pedophile cannibal ring that was run out of the basement of a pizza joint in D.C. that doesn't have a basement. And the cucumbers aren't going anywhere. They're not drying up and blowing away. So would they hang their hats on something like the president? You're damn right they would. They're nuts. They have precisely zero civic understanding. They are like that ancient article from the Onion from oh so long ago. Man passionate believer in constitution that exists only in his own mind. And that gave rise to the whole it's in the constitution thing. Oh, they're passionate about the shit they don't know anything about. You know, the Dunning-Kruger effect also applies to the Constitution. So do you want to pull the pin on that metal pineapple and play hot potato with it? Because I don't. Meanwhile, the maggots will be like, throw it to me. Steve in New York says, looks like my internet went sideways. That makes sense because as Randy Radar reminds me, Verizon was purportedly having trouble today. there were all kinds of internet problems, especially in the Northeast and Central Atlantic area. Cloud services had troubles. God, I forget where I was today. Where, you know, they couldn't check me out because the internet was down, and it wasn't just down because it's West Virginia and we've got shitty internet. It was out all kinds of different places. So, yeah. Sorry, Nick ups. But Kyle points out, I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, and it's probably COVID-19, but considering that he's the president pro tem of the Senate and going to oversee Trump's impeachment, I mean, but he's had both vaccines. And granted, that only gets you up to 94 or 95%, but he's been masking. He's not some sort of mask hole COVIDiot. I'm more worried about something far more prosaic, personally. And I just wish Senator Leahy the very, very best. And Lou pointing out something very true. Republicans will get rid of the Senate filibuster once and for all, once it benefits them. Precisely. And Jimmy in the Great Northwest, speaking to both Steve and me, it's who they are. The Jim Shorts, Jordan, and Florida drunk boy crowd, they are one with the terrorists, and it's hard to argue that. And I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut. Kamala presiding would fly in the face of Biden saying that he's hands-off when it comes to the Senate, that they make their own decisions. Still, I think she'd be ideal, and there's always a way to talk around it. The Repigs are using Biden's calls for unity against him for any type of executive action or proposed package they don't like. We need to play their game and just talk around it. And I'm sorry, but I'm at a place where I cannot stand Kristen Sinema. I'm so aggravated that she's coming out against doing away with the filibuster, I've concluded she's an idiot. Funny thing is, I remember when she was being catapulted to fame back when Keith Olbermann had his show on MSNBC and had her on a lot back in the Reign of Error. And she didn't come across like an idiot. I think she was a member of the, maybe he started having her on when she was still in the Arizona legislature. And then when she got into the House of Representatives, Darlene, I tend to think of her more as a cold, calculating politician. And, you know, she got into office on this bold, progressive record and then started running away from it as quickly as she could get away from it. And I guess she and Joe are, to a certain extent, BFFs. And to this day, I'm trying to figure out how it is that Joe can say that the American people want to keep the filibuster when more people voted for the party that wants to get rid of the filibuster than voted for the party that wants to keep it. It's the damnedest thing. Now, to go back to what Darlene said, and this is a matter of disagreeing without being disagreeable, I could not more completely disagree with Darlene's statement that it flies in the face, Kamala presiding over the trial would fly in the face of Biden saying that he's hands off when it comes to the Senate. Kamala Harris, by virtue of being Vice President of the United States, is a member of the Senate. She is imbued with constitutional power to be hands-on in the Senate as the president of that body. And see, this is one of those things that makes more sense about her presiding over the Senate trial simply because she would not have a vote. The only time the president of the Senate, the vice president as president of the Senate gets a vote is in case it's a 50-50 tie on the question of whether or not to convict Trump on this one count bill of impeachment. There will be no 50-50 tie for her to break because it's either 66 or 67, depending on whether, if Leahy's there at 67, there's either 67 votes or there aren't. And so she would, I should think, be the more administratively acceptable choice. You know, assuming you're one of these multimillionaire right-wing Republican maggot freaks who, you know, all shuckses it up and puts on the corn pone accent and actually is a fucking Rhodes Scholar. Hi, John Kennedy in Louisiana. Another turncoat, used to be a Democrat, Republican now. Because suddenly he found his family values. But there's no good faith argument for her not to preside over the Senate. The only arguments to be made in that regard are if there are questions of the politics of it. And the politics of it are rather divorced from the idea of the constitutionality of it. There's nothing in this Constitution that says that Kamala has to say, "Mother, may I," to either Charles Schumer or Mitch McConnell. She can walk in and sit down and do it. Okay, you want to get a little more paranoid? Let's do that. What if, and let me preface this with a note from Jeremy in Vermont, subject line, Patrick Leahy. Went over to my local news, and the comments from the maggots about Patrick Leahy are as to be expected, i.e., bye, if he dies, he dies, good riddance, no sympathy, term limits, Wolverines, freedom! Yeah. Not surprising. Maggot's gonna maggot. But it is her right. It is her absolute right. And that's what I was trying to cross, touching on in talking with Steve in New York. Pretty sure Aaron Burr had been a member of the Senate from New York. And then he became Jefferson's vice president. And Jefferson didn't have any say-so when Burr and, you know, the whole thing with Alexander Hamilton had already taken place. Burr was resigning as vice president. And one of the last things he did as vice president was to sit in judgment of Justice Chase, who had been impeached on strictly political lines, because impeachments are political processes. But the charges they came up with were such a compendium of just unutterable bilge that in the course of presiding over the trial, when it came time to vote, they acquitted the justice, and the justice went back and took his seat on the Supreme Court. And almost entirely uniformly, everyone agreed that Vice President Burr had done a masterful, admirable, and honorable job of presiding over that trial. And so I'm having a hard time. I mean, if I were the Republicans, I would want Kamala Harris to preside simply because you can run on that. It's all politics. And we can't constantly be afraid of the politics of things. She's brilliant. And I have no doubt that if she sat in that chair presiding over that trial, that she would do a masterful job. But then, and then that in turn would give the Republicans a chance to turn it into an absolute damn circus, because they would hold a vote on every ruling she issued that they didn't like. And they'd try to get a 51-49 on what it, on you know, overruling her. Because the Senate impeachment process is a convoluted mess. And I guess the framers wanted it to be that way because, you know, I used to be, and still am to a certain extent, convinced of the idea that the framers really did want the threat of impeachment hanging over every president every second of every day. A sort of Damocles to keep the chief executive from deciding that they were all that in a bag of chips. And we have seen instances where it could have been much more helpful if that were the case. You really think in 2003 that we would have gone in and waged a war against the innocent people of Iraq on nothing more than a flimsy tissue of lies and, "He tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam. We're taking him out." If he had known that impeachment proceedings would be launched against him and a bill of impeachment against George W. Bush would have landed in the Senate before the first shot was fired in Iraq, I tend to think that we would not have had the Iraq War had that been the case. And I am at odds with people who say things like, we need to look forward and not back. And I frankly don't give a tinker's damn about unity as long as the people I have to unify with are Matt fucking Gaetz, Jim Shorts Jordan, a treasonous bastard like Mo Brooks Les Brames, or Tommy the Tuber in the Senate. You really want to be unified with those people? The only real answer to national unity is to make sure that those people are taken out of power and are never allowed to get near it again. You know, it could be that's part of the problem we have in terms of where we are now, is that what the framers came up with was a lovely idea for the late 18th and into the 19th century. But a close reading of American history shows you how quickly it can go off the rails. And it didn't take that long. Jefferson's Louisiana Purchase was arguably unconstitutional as hell, but he did it anyway. Pick a president from the second wave after the revolutionaries were gone. How about the Indian Removal Act? You know, Andrew Jackson said the quiet part out loud on that one. Justice Marshall has issued his order, now let him enforce it. Meaning that he, Andrew Jackson, was more than happy to go to war with the Supreme Court of the United States. And then he went ahead and committed genocide. James K. Polk, one-termer, but he was in there just long enough to start the one war that we had to look back on when George W. was starting Bush War II. Because up until 2003, the Mexican War, launched by James K. Polk, was among the dirtiest and filthiest, nastiest, most vile, ugly, undemocratic, un-American things ever done in our history. A country that had done absolutely nothing to us except exist. And we waged war on them because we, by God, wanted the rest of the American West that we hadn't got under the Louisiana Purchase. And it was. It was filthy and it was bloody, and most Americans know nothing about it. Most people, if you ask them about the Mexican War, you know, we marched into Mexico and that was the end of it. Jesus, it was brutal. And little boys, little Mexican boys giving their lives in a heroic stand at Chapultepec against an army comprised of young officers named Lee and Grant, Johnston and Sherman, and Jefferson Davis. It was so nasty, that war, that a contingent of American soldiers who were recent immigrants from Ireland said, "Hook it." And because they watched the American soldiers indiscriminately slaughtering people that they had no business being in a war against. And they deserted. And they are known to this day as the San Patricios. San Patricio, Patricia, I don't know. The St. Patrick's Brigade. And they are revered as heroes in Mexico. And they should be so revered here today. And they are celebrated. We're a little over a month away. Month and a half. They're celebrated on St. Patrick's Day in Mexico. Or so I have been told. So, you know, once again, and I think Dr. Bill would agree with me, what we don't know about civics and history in this country may very well wind up at some point in time being damned well our comeuppance. And we may be facing that now. But from a historical standpoint, and I had a note from Pauline. And Pauline said to me, "I'm feeling as bad as I ever felt these past Trump years. It seems that justice is just not coming for these treasoners. Not enough justice and to not enough of them. Any antidote?" Well, the antidote is always history and civics in situations like this, maybe with a soupçon of the law. But I understand the feeling. And even this, if it turns out that we're half-hearted in prosecuting these treasonous domestic terrorists, these insurrectionists, even that will have a certain historic precedence. Because on this program, we have talked about the fact that it is what didn't happen after Lee's surrender at Appomattox Courthouse that in so many ways set the stage for what would come after. Lincoln didn't get to live long enough to issue any lasting directives on it. All we got was his inaugural address saying, with malice toward none and with charity for all. Well, he didn't say all who. But there were, with the exception of hanging Mary Surratt, again, in contravention of an order from the Supreme Court of the United States, we really didn't do a lot of house cleaning after a civil war that claimed some 300 plus thousand American military lives. And I'm not counting the people who fought in Butternut because they weren't Americans. They gave up their American citizenship to wage war against the United States. People should have swung from ropes. Confederate generals, the leaders of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, should have been the first one up the stairs onto the scaffold. Because when you blink at treason, treason blinks back. And you have further problems. And the entirety of my knowledge of Asian history is scarce as hell. My knowledge of South American history, the same. But in terms of Western European and European colonialist American history, every time you blink at treason, every time you wink at treason, treason is guaranteed to come back. Every time. And so, because we took a flyer on actually dealing with the causes of the Civil War, It's kind of why we find ourselves where we are today. It'd be a hell of a lot easier to talk about executing some fucking insurrectionists if we had a history of having cleaned up the mess the last time. But we didn't. And so we have this nasty little fantasy that somehow, if we ignore it, it'll just go away. Well, it doesn't. And what I'm saying goes exactly back to what Matt in San Francisco was talking about. An insurrection without consequences is a rehearsal. And I, too, have a foreboding sense of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because there's no remorse. There's no sense of apology. Have you seen a clip of Representative Mo Brooks Les Brames standing up in the House and saying, "I want to deeply apologize for any words that I may have said which may have influenced anybody into engaging in the incident of white domestic terrorism, the insurrection that we all witnessed here on January the 6th. I want to apologize. I'm so sincerely sorry. I should never have done what I done." Fuck no. Because treason almost never apologizes. Almost never. Steve, with an observation, let's be honest here, punishing treason. The reason the maggots didn't demonstrate at every state capitol as they said they would is because they were terrified at going to jail after seeing the FBI rounding up the January 6th seditionists. But there will be a next time. You're dead on right about that. Yeah, I think that's part of it, but it's also because you've got, for instance, a triumph. Well, no, it isn't. Word moment. You've got a trifeminate in a place like Michigan. Gretchen Whitmer got a lot of shit some time back. She said, "My job is not to pat everybody on the head and tell them it's going to be okay. My job is to speak the truth, and the truth is the Michigan State Capitol is not safe." And that's part of why the maggots didn't go apeshit like they had planned on it. Because, again, they're kind of like, and there's an irony in this, they're kind of like the bald eagle. The bald eagle is our national symbol, and it became our national bird or national symbol over the objection of Benjamin Franklin, who wanted the turkey, the wild turkey. Instead, the wild turkey wound up on a liquor bottle, and the bald eagle winds up on our currency and everything else. Because there's something about empires and eagles. But the one thing that the empires who adopt the symbol of the eagle tend to never really emphasize is that, and it, particularly in the case of the bald eagle never fights anything its own size. And given its druthers, the bald eagle would rather eat something that something else has already killed as to have to do the dirty, bloody work itself. And that's us. And it's distressing. But, you know, there are remedies. And we talk about those remedies. You know, we don't just gather together on this program and piss and moan. We laugh a lot. And we get frustrated a lot, and we get furious some. And the reason we do is because we recognize that these are not insoluble problems. This is not This is not Einstein going to his grave trying to pull together his unified field theory that probably couldn't exist in the first place. These are solvable problems if we only have the national will to solve them. When you have members of your national legislative body in open support of treason and insurrection and terrorism, you get rid of them. You use the mechanism that is constitutionally in place, and you don't wait for some milksop ethics committee to come to a conclusion. You fucking file a bill of expulsion. You get enough people together to bring it to the floor by a privileged resolution, and you debate it on the floor, not in some goddamn committee. And then you vote. And if you can't get rid of the treasoners, then you've just learned a shitload more than you probably ever even wanted to know about your country and where your country is going and what kind of ugly ride it's going to be to get there. Subject line from Mike in Cascadia. Preach, Brother Bob. Preach, Brother Rob. Preach, Brother Bob. I mean, preach, Sister Robin. Preach, Sister Robin. Amen, and thank you for that. Lots of fun little emojis under that. Look, I'm not trying. It's not even Wednesday. But I just hate seeing us crawling around on the ground acting like we're looking for a lost contact, when in fact what we're dealing with day to day to day to day is something that has the power to bring an absolute end to our country as we know it. And we are there. I mean, I am proud and happy for what is being accomplished so quickly and so efficiently and so competently by the Biden administration. But that business of walking and chewing gum has already outlived its welcome, because we've heard a lot about it since January 20th. Okay. But if we're going to walk it, if you're going to walk and chew gum, you got to be really confident, and you've got to keep your head up, and you got to worry about, you know, walking under ladders more than you do stepping on cracks. Because the reason there's a superstition against walking under ladders is because shit falls off ladders. Stepping on cracks, not so much. So what do you think? I mean, what remedies do you see that I don't? Because, you know, I'm not the shell answer girl. I sit and I read stuff and I ponder stuff and I wonder, because if you don't know where you've been, you cannot know where you are, and you certainly can't know where you're going. And so I look at where we've been, and it makes perfect sense how we got to where we are. And if we don't want to go where this path leads, we're going to have to do something to take the road less traveled. Because they'll be back. It's already being plotted. Oh, you guys, I can't leave you guys alone for a minute. Waiting for the other shoe to drop. Lee in New York says, I hate to ask, Robin, but is the other shoe a boot or a stiletto? Oh, sometimes it's just a little ballerina flat, because that's all you can get in a 13 wide. Earther says they can't be expulsed. That would seem mean, and the media would say bad things about us. Oh, fuck, I know. I mean, bless his heart. What was it, this morning or two mornings? No, I think maybe it was yesterday morning when on my filthy morning habit, Joe was throwing a throwing a hissy at Rob Portman, saying, "How dare you bow out now, you coward!" Well, I mean, okay. But I seem to recall a certain member of the House of Representatives deciding he didn't want any more of it. Yeah. Oh, and catty little moment of the morning, and I will give attribution to Agnes on this rather than take it for myself. We were engaging in our filthy little morning habit today. And Agnes, really... Agnes, if she hears me, she would probably come back here and affirm this. We were watching our filthy morning habit, and I think I was actually doing something else, looking at a different screen or whatever, when Agnes said, "What the? Who let Mika onto the set in her spa robe?" Honest to God, and you know, I called it her Obi-Wan Brzezinski robe. Just never a dull moment. You know, something for everybody on that program, I guess. But I looked up and went, "Really? What the? No shit." And there it was. Maybe it was a $4,000 designer dress that melanoma sent her, the one she decided not to wear getting off the airplane. Oy. But, well, it's all just so much fun. Hey, thank you very kindly to our pal Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you so much, Scott. That is huge. So Rico and DeBerg's challenge has been met. Mike in Cascadia knocked out the great big old Jim Justice challenge, and Jude took out a piece of the Rico and DeBerg's 50-50 commitulation challenge. And so what that means is that we are down to $460 to go to finish the month of January and have us some fundraising free radio as soon as the, and that's thanks to Dave, Irish Dave, and thanks to our buddy Dennis in Columbus, have us some fundraising free radio as soon as we knock out that $460. Steve in New York asking, "Is it me or has Agnes mastered the art of deadpan?" Oh, long time ago, because, well, for a little bit, because what the fuck is she wearing? And then, well, that calmed it, because it turned into an I can't believe it, you know, a little bit of a mini rant. I think at the moment she's maybe in the living room watching a movie with Ferg or something, so she doesn't know I'm talking about her. Shh, don't anybody tell. Okay. Lee in New York, Rob Portman from electoralvote.com, one of the possible Republicans who may succeed Portman is Jim Jordan. I know I mentioned that. And there's some other nutter from Ohio who is also in the running, and that was part and parcel of what Joey was talking about in Joey and Giraffe's Joey's Journal today. Yeah, there it is. Not just Jim Shorts Jordan. There may also there may be a steel cage death match between Jim Shorts Jordan and another nutter maggot, Jane Timken. So get your place your bets early. And that's true, too. We're talking about Vice President Harris presiding over the trial. Steve in New York points out, the maggots already hate her because she's got a vagina and because of the color of her skin. Maybe they figured they would give the maggots another reason to do violence to her. By the way, I'm waiting for the divine intervention argument for what happened to Senator Leahy. Well, we don't really know what happened yet, but, oh, sure, there's some, you know, there's some gospel sharp out there. That was God's vengeance upon her. Never mind. Yeah. And, of course, they hate everything about the maggots do. They hate everything about everything that Joe Biden is doing. You know, I've been sharing these stories night by night of these odious bills by which good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican maggots are attacking little trans kids. And a lot of this crap is being driven by and through the Family Research Council. And so there's Tony Perkins, who's all pissed off now because the Biden administration is going to go back to a legit census count. It was a stealthy move, adding a major census change to Biden's stack of executive orders. The last thing Democrats want to do after the November election is draw more attention to how they're systematically changing the process. Thanks to the GOP's overwhelming gains in state houses last November, conservatives will have a major role in drawing the next district lines. Republicans, the 538 explains, won almost every election where redistricting was at stake. They won the power to maximize the number of districts that favor their party. Both parties went into the election with the chance to draw more congressional districts than the other. But the end result was just about the best case scenario for Republicans. As the map here shows, Republicans are set to control the redistricting of 188 congressional seats, 43% of the entire House of Representatives. Now, this is also a man who, as recently as mid-December, was saying that Nitwit Nero is the lawful winner of the presidential election. They don't take days off. I keep saying that. It's true. It's just true. Oh, and following up, Darlene says, maybe I was inarticulate in my last email. I agree that Kamala should preside. I was simply offering an explanation, not an excuse, as to why she isn't presiding, as there's no good reason otherwise. Kamala is brilliant, and Joe is highly experienced as a senator. They should know better. I wonder what discussions behind the scenes occurred between them on why she isn't presiding. And look, as a woman, I'm counting on and expecting Kamala to speak up and push back at Biden when she thinks he's wrong, and supposedly that is why he selected her as vice president. What if she did speak up? We women are past the point of being goddamned wallflowers in this sexist country. Look, the possible illness of Pat Leahy could make the perfect excuse and opportunity for Kamala to take over. Pat will recover, but it's too infirm right now, so Kamala must step in and preside, and it's in the Constitution, okay? Jesus, the Dems are utterly poor tacticians if they don't grab this opportunity. Someone needs to get the word to sweet old Pat to take it easy and just play juror. I know you know, Robin, that 81 million plus went through hell to get Dems in control. Through hell. We cannot let the Democratic Party squander this and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory again, like they always seem to do. We have to keep the pressure up. I kind of feel like you twisted what I wrote. Again, I will take the blame for being inarticulate. I still think Kristen Sinema is an idiot. Well, I'll give you a cowbell for Kristen Sinema is an idiot. I was not trying to twist anything. I was actually trying to understand it. I was trying to understand it in its fullness. I think it falls on the fact that you've got senators who are following Senate traditions that aren't that old. I personally would like to see Republican or Democrat. I'm equal opportunity here. I refuse to be a hypocrite on this. I'd like to see the vice president do the vice president's job. And it's not a job that the, it's not a job that the president gets any say so over. So I apologize if you felt like I twisted your words. I did not. It was not by any stretch of the imagination my intent. I was just trying to clarify the fact that there's no, you know, at least within constitutional terms, there is no boundary that says that the president gets to determine. But politically, there probably is. Oh, no, please, no. Stephen, New York says, Senate candidate in Ohio. I wonder if Ken Blackwell will throw his hat in the ring. Why not? Come on, let's them and them fight. I'd love to see just a nasty little contest. You know, kind of like what Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins ran against Kelly Offler Waffler Loffler. And we saw how that worked out. Please, let's have a little internecine war among the maggot contingent and the and to the extent that they even exist, the normal Republicans in Ohio. Tear each other to pieces. Here, you need a claw hammer? Really? And then maybe you do get a Democrat in that office. But I would, you know, he's not my favorite, but I'd hate to lose a House member like Tim Ryan. And I don't know if that district can be counted on, especially if it gets re-gerrymandered to deliver a Democrat. Are there, you know, that's another one of those frustrating things. What I said earlier, the lack of a bench. But my God, there's got to be an up and comer in the Democratic minority somewhere in the Ohio legislature. Bring her on. And let's run somebody head to head against one of these freaks that can kick ass and take names. And I said, bring her on, because I think that's where the vast majority of the talent in the future is going to come from in the Democratic Party. Women and people of color. And women who are people of color. So, you know, and God, I couldn't be more open to that and more anxious for that and more eager for that. Wait a sec, says Steve in New York. Tony Perkins? So the GOP will control 43% of districts for redistricting. Doesn't that mean that the Dems will control 57%? What am I clearly missing? You remind me of what a buddy of mine used to say, Steve. He said, you know, they got that statistic out that says that all that 47% of fatal car wrecks is caused by drunks. Don't that mean 53% is caused by the sober people? Flavio says, I don't hold out much hope for Schumer, and I thought Rachel outdid herself in fawning and slowballing. Am I alone in this? No, I actually found it kind of, I watched it, and I found it kind of impressive. Look, we don't have to have people jumping up and down and tearing at their clothing and their hair and hollering, Haben Sie gehört, Haben Gewürten sein, after every sentence to be effective. I've always thought that Schumer was a doormat, but the fact of the matter is, I think if you had, oh, I don't know, pick your favorite. Look, if Bernie was minority leader in the last Congress, Bernie would have been, wait for it, I know you don't believe me, a doormat. Because that's who the minority leader is. There's just not a lot more that you can do, with the exception of the filibuster, and then you've got to keep the cloture motion from passing. And he didn't have the numbers. But by God, we're eager to excoriate him, aren't we? On a job that would probably crush any given one of us. I mean, it's got to be exhausting. And this is not me being the Chuck Schumer Defense Department. But I thought he answered the questions well. And I think there's some serious deep strategery going on. So you trot out Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. Because remember, the majority leader knows everything. That's your fucking job. You've got to know which way your caucus is going to go. You got to your whips have got to be out there counting votes and nudging and cajoling. If you wanted to try to outmaneuver a political thug like Moscow Mitch, maybe you'd trot out Sonny and Cher. I mean, Kristen and Joe. To say, no, we stand behind the filibuster. I mean, we loved how the filibuster was used to keep civil rights from advancing. It's a hallowed Senate tradition. And then McConnell says, okay, you know, we'll go ahead with the organizing rule because I know that we're never going to break the filibuster. You know, it doesn't have to happen right off the bat. Yeah, Flavio says, I don't know. McConnell didn't have any trouble as a minority leader. Right, because he is a different kind of minority leader. Is that what you want? Do you want the Democratic version of a Mitch McConnell? I promise you, you don't. Because we either believe in Democratic principles or we don't. Mitch McConnell doesn't. He abused the rules. He changed the rules when he saw fit. And maybe there comes a time when you do that. Harry Reid did that, and we still called him a doormat. He changed the rules. He got rid of the filibuster for lower court judicial nominees. We still called him a goddamn doormat. And now in retirement, Harry's saying, yeah, you know, it really is time to get rid of the filibuster. Let's just have done with it. Maybe I'm a Pollyanna. Maybe I'm completely missing the point. But I'm willing to watch and see how it plays, because once the threat of the filibuster went away, then, oh, lo and behold, we can go forward. That means that we get our committee chairs. That means because Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin came out and said, no, we just love us some filibuster. That means that Bernie gets to be the head of the budget committee now. How about that? See? It's a long, deep game. In fact, that's the name of Mitch McConnell's autobiography. The Long Game. And we can't just be a constant reactionary, I hate our own side party. I've done some of it. We've all done some of it. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. But we can't be that all the time. At least not from where I stand. So, hey, didn't the program start like 2.5 minutes ago? I mean, the temperature's only fallen from like 75 to 68, and it's still naked radio. The program's over, son of a gun. And so we'll have at it again tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. It will be a prayer meeting Wednesday of Thanksgiving. Insofar as it is our first prayer meeting Wednesday in 4 long years that hasn't featured an orange rapist misanthrope in the White House. Yeah. And hey, if you're part of the overnight crew, maybe consider jumping in on that $460 that remain so we can finish January early but on time. And I can spend the next few days not talking about fundraising. $460 does that. Thanks to all of you who, through your Patreon and PayPal subscriptions, so kind. Thanks to all of you Thanks to your a la carte contributions. Some or all of the above. Keep this program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Please keep feeling better, my friend. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Let's look into what this double masking business means and maybe come to a good understanding of it. Paul from Parts Unknown, if you can shoot a note, we'd love to know more from you. But wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use hand sanitizer liberally. Maintain your social distance as best you possibly can. And, you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes up to you saying, you know, they wanted me to get a COVID test, and next thing you know, they won't let me wear my American flag socks. It's in the Constitution. Avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all.